Welcome to the Do Good to Lead Well podcast. If you're passionate about mastering self-leadership, then you're in the right place. I have always been curious about and fascinated by the pursuit of leadership excellence. This is why I pursued my PhD in psychology with a specialization in business, and I've continued to dedicate my career to understanding the science and practice of positive leadership. My name is Craig Dowden. I'm a best-selling author, award-winning keynote speaker, executive coach, and member of the Forbes Coaches Council. Each week, I'll bring you world-class content on the science and practice of positive leadership. Through my conversations with best-selling authors, TED speakers, and top CEOs, you'll be able to leverage their insights and experience so you can maximize your potential and be the leader the world needs you to be. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Do Good to Lead Well VIP webinar and podcast series. I'm your host, Craig Dowden. Thrilled that you're able to join us today. Really looking forward to this conversation and doing a deeper dive into positive leadership. And for those of you who are new to the program and listening in the live audience, a very warm welcome. Thrilled that you're able to join us today. And for those of you who are loyal listeners and have continued to support the program, a very heartfelt expression of gratitude. Because of your ongoing support, Do Good to Lead Well is now ranked in the top 0.5% of all podcasts globally and received some really exciting data from Spotify, which I'm going to be sharing in the coming weeks. And thank you again, your comments, your likes, your shares, your suggestions about how we can bring in the highest quality guests and the types of conversations you're interested in has really, we could not have done this without you. And a primary reason for the success of this podcast is because the amazing guests we've been able to attract through your support. And today I've been really excited about having this conversation as soon as this was booked in the calendar with Allison Simpson, who's the president and CEO of the Canadian Marketing Association, CMA. She's held executive marketing roles and served as president of several marketing agencies throughout her career. She also has held executive roles and led brand, digital, loyalty, integrated marketing, and customer experience teams for top-tier brands, including Holt Renfrew, Rogers Communications, and TMX Group. Prior to joining the CMA, Allison was chief marketing officer and head of consumer business at Key, an innovative technology company that has developed the world's first all-digital on-demand home ownership platform to make home ownership a reality for many. She's a director on several boards, including a not-for-profit and a publicly traded. She also serves on the advisory board for the Master of Management Analytics and Artificial Intelligence Program at the Smith School of Business. And I could go on and on. Yet, welcome to the program, Allison.
Craig, thank you so much. And congratulations on your incredible success. You've had an amazing first year of the podcast. I absolutely count myself as a loyal listener. So it's an absolute privilege to join you today.
Well, thank you very much for your kind words. And I'm really excited to delve into our conversation today. And one of the things that I came across in terms of your background, your bio, you've ran in 63 marathons and a 6-day ultra across the Sahara. So we have to start there. I think there's so much richness around, especially I'm going, what am I going to do this weekend? What motivated you to not only start, just to accumulate so many marathons? And what are some really powerful lessons that you've gleaned from those experiences?
It's a great place to start. And if you're smart, you won't be doing any of that this weekend. It can also sound like that's so virtuous. So I want to start by level setting to say the beginning of my first marathon had anything but virtuous starting point. I was actually out at an industry event with a couple of close friends. We were having a glass of wine and another glass of wine. They had both done marathons before, so with a few more glasses of wine, it started to sound like a really great idea. And they both knew me well enough to say, okay, well, if we can get Allison to shake on it, then she's going to be committed. So I shook on it. I was committed. I showed up at the office the next day and there was an Excel spreadsheet waiting for me on my desk. And I swear it was the most intimidating document I'd ever seen. So I'd run before, but like a 10K would have been the longest distance. And I'm looking at the 16-week training program and seeing that I'm going to be running like 60 kilometers a week. I'm going to be running a 30K kilometer twice before the race and thinking, what have I done? But thanks to the power of friendship, they trained with me all the way through it. We ran the first marathon in Toronto together and I was absolutely hooked. So I did another one a couple months later. I figured if I'm going to train for a marathon, I might as well get two medals for one training cycle. So I planned a trip to Italy a few weeks after the Toronto Marathon and signed up for the Venice Marathon and did that. And then I discovered that running's fun. It's great therapy. I love to travel. So now I can combine those two things. And suddenly 20 years and 63 marathons later, here I am. When I sort of step back from the origin story, though, like there are absolutely some really powerful connections from pushing myself physically and accomplishing something that I definitely didn't think I could do. It's obviously incredibly gratifying. It's also very freeing to see yourself, see that you can accomplish more than you ever thought possible, and you start to see more potential in yourself for sure. And doing something like that also gives you a fresh perspective and ways, different ways to go about solving issues. So it certainly wasn't by design, but as I got hooked and more passionate about running, I really did have a lot of great life lessons. And then for the Sahara 6-day ultra marathon, that was a good friend in the industry calling. He had done one of these ultra races before. So I was thinking about bringing together a group of marketers to raise money for the National Association, Benevolence Association for Canada, which is a charitable organization supporting the marketing profession. I'd actually been on the board before, so it was certainly a cause close to my heart. And when Stefan called and started to talk to me about this crazy idea, it was an instantaneous yes. And to be honest, I think it had to be an instantaneous yes, because if you actually thought through, so I'm going to train, I'm going to run 6 days in a row with no modern amenities. I'm not going to shower those 6 days. I'm not going to have a toilet for those 6 days. I'm going to carry everything I need on a pack, including the food, in a pack on my back. Like, no rational person, when you think it through, would sign up for it. So the fact that it was a fairly spontaneous decision was absolutely the right way. And I mean, we could fill the whole podcast with all of the lessons I learned from that Sahara race, but it was a lifetime accomplishment and something that I absolutely will never regret having done.
Wow. And that's fantastic. And yes, I'm sure we'll cover multiple experiences that you've had. And I already have a question that's come in from the live audience. And for those of you who are joining live, Allison has kindly agreed to take questions. So this is a fabulous opportunity to connect with an extraordinarily accomplished chief executive and highly inspirational. So please type your questions in the chat. Kathy said, "This is amazing. You've run so many marathons. I find it difficult to go after the goals that I really want, like my stretch goals. Any advice for how to get my mindset around how to put myself in the best position to do that?" Great, great question.
Yeah, that's a great question, Kathy. Thank you very much. So a few things. Chunk it down, because when you have a big goal, it makes sense that it's going to be very intimidating. And because it's something you've never done before, of course, you're going to question your ability to get there. So break it down into more bite-sized, manageable pieces. Focus on those short incremental gains, and then you'll look back 6 weeks and 6 months from now and realize how far you've come. I would also say attitude. Like, I learned, no matter how much you love your profession, no matter how much I love running, there are days and sometimes weeks where you just don't have the motivation. You're struggling professionally or personally. And in those situations, looking at yourself and saying, okay, I can make this, the attitude I bring to this can either make this better or worse. And making sure you're looking at changing your attitude and trying to see the positive in it. And I'll use an example from some of my training. When you're training for a marathon, the Sahara was in October, so I had to train through really cold winters and really hot summers. And there were some really rough days where I just did not want to get out. When I reframe my point of view on it, it's like, okay, clearly running 6 days in the Sahara is not going to be easy. So let's consider this adversity training. If it's like pouring rain or minus 20, my ability to go out and run during those situations, I'm building, and that's adversity training. So it took something that still kind of stunk, but at least it gave it more purpose. And then when I was actually looking at the bigger goal and outrunning the Sahara, I remembered back to those times and situations where I had done something I didn't want to do and accomplished it, and it gave me more confidence. Kathy, that was a really great question to kick things off, and hopefully I gave you some fodder for your own next goal.
And I love that, and thank you. And yes, I already have positive feedback on that very insightful answer. I love the perspective around chunking it down, making it more manageable. I think that's so incredibly powerful. And this is one of the things I find I'm so grateful for hosting the program, because we recently had Nathan Furr. So he's a professor at INSEAD and wrote the book, The Upside of Uncertainty. And I love that essentially it was a mirror image of what you're just talking about, Allison, in terms of the framing, a reframing. So the adversity training, you know, like, hey, I'm doing this and I'm pursuing something of value that's really going to make a difference. So I've got another question already from Tom saying, I love how you reframe that. Can you share secrets around, like, what was that mental process of deconstruction?
Oh, that's a great question. I don't know that I have a great answer for it. So part of it is bringing curiosity and a willingness to test and try new things to it. I can talk about lots of things that I'm proud to have accomplished. Trust me, along the way, there are probably a lot more things that I thought were going to work out brilliantly and didn't, huge mistakes that I made and learned from, measured risks that I took that paid off, and lots of measured risks that I've taken that didn't pay off. So just bringing that openness to it, recognizing that none of us have all the answers. And if we do, we're both naive and arrogant, which is not a pretty combination for anyone. So be open and willing to try things, maintain perspective, and be willing to laugh at yourself. And just, yeah, you just have to try. Like, you can sit there and think, well, I don't have the perfect answer. And if you're waiting for the perfect answer, you're never going to start. Or you can just say, no, I'm going to try something. If it doesn't work, then let me hopefully at least learn a lesson from it. And then I'll pivot and try something new based on what I've just learned and build my knowledge base that way.
Well, and I really resonate and appreciate the observation around that leading with curiosity. It's such an invaluable skill, especially these days where things are evolving so incredibly quickly. And so to approach it in that way, remove the judgment from the situation and really think about, okay, how can I frame this in the most inspiring way that can really get me energized? I love it. This is so, so good. I did want to get your perspective, Allison, on, I mean, leadership is discussed. It's becoming the hot topic. It's always been a hot topic of conversation, and it's just even more elevated in terms of its level of importance. So what are the leadership qualities that you feel that people need to possess to be successful both now and as leaders in the future?
I love that question, Craig. There's a long list, but when I look to prioritize, there are probably three that I would prioritize. The first one is absolutely courage. And you opened by talking about how incredibly quickly the world around us is changing. And it takes such courage to lead and to really acknowledge that we don't have all of the answers and to be open to taking those measured risks. The reality is that status quo and doing the same things the same way that we've always done them is not an option. So courage would be my first one. My second one is curiosity. That's absolutely a theme in my life. And there are so much exciting change happening right now. So being curious and embracing that learning mindset for both ourselves and our teams is a really powerful and important way to understand and ultimately find new opportunities in the change that surrounds us. And then the third one is openness. So to be courageous and to be curious also takes openness. And that's an openness to new ideas. It's an openness to diverse perspectives. It's an openness to not having all the answers and an openness to making mistakes. So those are the three that I would lead with.
Well, and thank you. And again, lots of comments. This is fabulous. Love the top three. And I really appreciate that. And in particular, how you led with courage. We had Doug Conan on, the former CEO of Campbell Soup, and said, you know, it's tough to lead with conviction unless you know what you stand for. Today requires courageous choices. And I love that. And I feel, again, it resonates so strongly with me in conversations that I have with executives and chief executives in particular around, okay, that courage to step in and make those decisions, take bold steps, and be open. And I love that counterbalance that you're providing. And I've got a follow-up question, not surprisingly, come right in. Stan said, I love how you continually reference curiosity, curiosity. Where did that come from? Was that natural? Was that learned? Just curious.
Curious, absolutely. So my parents would absolutely deserve a lot of credit for that. They both grew up in very challenging childhoods. They didn't have a lot of opportunities, and they really, it was their grit and resilience that made them the success they were. So when they had my sisters and I, they really taught us to be independent at a very early stage. They really taught us to, if you want something, you need to work for it. And they also taught us not to bring any biases around the people that you meet, give everyone the full benefit of the doubt and assume whether they're, you're at a restaurant and they're serving you, or they have a big fancy title like CEO. No one is better than the other. Always be curious about people's backgrounds. Always be learning yourself and evolving yourself. So I would give my parents full credit for really seeding that in me at a very early age.
And thank you again. Lots of comments coming in. I love how you're emphasizing the impact of, you know, our experiences growing up, what we learned from our parents, and how we take that forward. I think that's so vitally essential. I think that's fantastic. And one of the things, knowing you and your philosophy, there's just so much great stuff that, as you said, we could spend so long. I absolutely, this hour is going to fly by. One of the things that I find particularly inspiring about you and your approach is really you have this very strong philosophy that great ideas can come from anywhere, like any level and even unexpected places. And I love, and this is a great time to ask that question, bridging it with curiosity. Some leaders, executives are almost, well, there are only certain sources to go to find the best ideas or certain people. Can you unpack that for us? Because I think there's just so much power in that and so much missed opportunity if we don't embrace it the way that you do. So I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, and it is absolutely a passion of mine. It's a passion of mine because at all levels in my career, I've seen really incredible ideas come from, obviously, people with deep experience and big fancy titles, but more importantly, from people that are newer to an industry or newer to a project or earlier in their career. And those people can often be intimidated because they don't have the experience other people in the room or on the team can have. They can sort of sit back and fold themselves back. So something I'm proudest of when people describe me as a leader, it's my ability and desire to really draw everyone into a conversation and really be title agnostic. And the reason I do that is because I've seen so many businesses and brands benefit from that fresh thinking and from people that haven't been trained a certain way, really can positively challenge the conversation and come up with great new ideas for sure. So that's a big part of it as well. And then even when I've been in a senior role, it's how you manage and work with your team. But I'll use an example. When I was a CMO for Holt Renfrew, we build out these wonderful new products. We build out these great marketing campaigns. And then every day I'd get five times a day, I'd get the sales reports and see, okay, yeah, that's working really well. Or, no, that's not working anything like we expected it to. So the time that I would spend by walking through the store, observing how people were actually interacting, patching into call centers or the customer support on our e-com site, looking at consumers and getting their feedback on what was working and what wasn't is another way that great ideas and fresh thinking and better approaches can come by embracing the fact that great ideas come from anywhere.
And I really appreciate that and how you're able to draw everyone in. And again, being open to those perspectives, because in a lot of cases, and there's some great research around this as well, where subject matter expertise can really undermine the ability to be innovative because people bring in such strong assumptions or, well, I know what's going on kind of thing. And I think it's so powerful. In my own coaching work, some of the best conversations that I've had is when I'm asking the most naive question possible because you just don't know what, you know, what everyone else quote unquote knows. And I just love that. philosophy. And I think it is so enriching because we can just learn so much and expand our thinking. And I've got another, this is just great. The questions keep coming in from Wendy, who wanted to go back to the statement of around, I don't know. So as like, it's amazing that you say that you will say that, and yet just surprise, are you concerned people will react negatively to you saying, I don't know? Would love to hear a little bit more around that practice.
But part of the answer depends on the question that I'm asked. So if I'm asked a question where I probably should have the answer, then absolutely the person hearing that I don't know would be concerned, and rightly so. But I also think to be an authentic leader, you have to live to your values, and you also have to be realistic. Like I definitely do not have all of the answers. And if I don't have an answer, I'm not going to try to fake my way through it. If I'm worried that the person I don't have the answer for is going to misinterpret that or be concerned by that, then what I will need to do is to say, I don't have the answer. Here are some initial thoughts around it. Now what I'm going to do is take the question away, do some more research, think about it a little bit more, and come back to you when I've had a chance to have a better answer and had more credibility in the answer I'm providing. So as long as you can give people a path to get to the answer, then I haven't had it backfire on me at all.
I really appreciate in terms of that, so the separation about, okay, well, if it's something that it's part of what I, you know, should know in my knowledge base, that's an appropriate expectation. And I've got, oh, I love this comment. I'm going to read it because they said, ooh, I love the script. I am adopting that today about the, I don't know. And then here's what I'm going to do and I will get back to you. I think that's so powerful because sometimes people hesitate around, okay, I'm just going to close that loop. And I love how to build on this comment that what you're doing is saying, hey, I don't know right now. Here's the action I'm going to take. And then I'll be able to follow up, which really just reassures the other person. All right, I've got this. I'm going to action it and away to go. I think that's so, so powerful.
Well, there's there's a benefit for me because now I'm going to go and get learning I didn't have. And there's a benefit for them, hopefully, because if I'm assuming in that situation, I'm more senior than them. If I'm comfortable saying, I don't know, and here's the path to get me to an answer, hopefully they'll be more comfortable saying, you know what, I don't have all the answers either. So let's go on this journey together.
And again, what's fantastic about what you're saying is that, to your point, so many people will just talk without, clearly they have no idea what they're talking about. They're just saying words and hoping that it sounds like something. And everybody is like, okay, no, no, no. And a really powerful point. And again, this is for everybody listening, such a strong leadership practice and principle for each of us is that people look to us for how to behave. And what more powerful model than to show that, to be open around that, and it inspires others to be more open. And there's a big emphasis on psychological safety and creating safe spaces for dialogue. Like, what an extraordinary practice to be able to unlock that. I would imagine, Allison, you see people respond in kind when you're doing that.
Absolutely.
I've got another question from Tim, who's wondering, how do you reconcile or how do you balance the different roles? So you're the CEO of an organization, you're the CEO of a membership organization, and then you're interacting with the board. So there are lots of different. So how do you bring all of those things together?
So throughout my career, I've always been attracted to complexity and matrixed organizations. I started in the agency world where I was working across multiple brands, multiple industries in any given week. And that variety really feeds me. So even when I went more corporate side, I was always attracted to businesses or opportunities that were more diverse or that were going through fundamental and significant change, because that diversity really does feed me. So when I look today at the marketing association that I'm so fortunate to lead, I've grown up in the marketing profession. I absolutely love it. I have benefited greatly from it. I've always been actively involved in volunteering, whether it's sitting on other boards and very actively involved with the CMA. So when the recruiter called about the opportunity to come in and lead it, That was such an easy yes to say, I'm absolutely going to meet the board and find out more about this opportunity, because it's really given me an opportunity to give back to a profession I adore at a massive scale. I am incredibly blessed to have a board of senior members who are incredibly supportive. We've got such a strong base of 450 corporate member organizations that are very actively involved in helping enrich the marketing profession in Canada. So instead of seeing it being complex or challenging to manage those different stakeholder groups, I'm fed by and thrive on working across those diverse stakeholder groups. And that's not for everyone. Like, some people are just perform better if they stay in one vertical and one focused area, and that's absolutely great for a lot of people. For me, it really is the diversity and the opportunity to influence and be and learn and work through different industries and different stakeholder groups that really feeds me. So any choice is going to have be a great fit for some people and not a great fit for others. This one happens to be a great fit for me.
Well, and thank you again. Great comments coming through. And what I really appreciate about your answer, Allison, it brings me back almost to the beginning of our conversation, where it's around the framing, right? And how you look at these scenarios. And I also appreciate the observation. It's finding places that fit with our natural strengths, the talents we have, the passions that we possess, and all of us have them. And then it's selecting the right environment where we really feel truly engaged. And again, I appreciate that mindset exercise. And your answer really just ties in beautifully with another question I wanted to ask for us to explore together, because I know another area where you're really passionate about is the importance of diversity and building businesses and driving success. And it's something that you're highly attuned and really engaged in. So can you talk more around that idea, the experiences you've had, the benefits that you've observed firsthand? Because I think this is such an important topic, and for some organizations, they can struggle with that.
And you're so right. There is such incredible power in valuing difference in diversity. So understanding that different points of view, different backgrounds, different lived experiences will make the work that we do and the decisions that we're making so much stronger. And bringing that understanding to the teams that we're building, to the approach that we have as business, really is incredibly rewarding. It's also really smart business. So there's great research around the importance of diversity in building a business. I've absolutely seen the positive impact it can drive firsthand. Just to bring some numbers to it, some of the stats I've heard, one from Gartner, 75% of organizations with diverse and inclusive decision-making teams will exceed their financial targets. If you don't have other reasons to want to embrace diversity, there is one very real business reason why we should be embracing it. And it also links back to realizing that we will all get better by being open to others and having people of very different backgrounds. Just stretches our thinking, makes us smarter, and really encourages us to come up with new innovations and new ideas. And I know both creativity and productivity also both are two key elements that really will benefit from diversity of experience. So it's a really important mandate for me as a leader. It's a really important mandate for us as the Association for Canadian Marketing as well. And it's absolutely been a passion area and an important area of focus for us.
And I love the stats. As people know, follow the program, I'm a huge evidence-based practice person. So it inspires me every single day. And I really appreciate, Allison, how you made the link around how it improves the quality of our decision-making because of the diverse perspectives. It broadens our view on different issues. It allows us to connect in so many different ways. And also, as you say, and I've shared this, it's not just the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do for your business. Like, there are business implications when we embrace diversity. So on any metric you want to look at, it's the right thing to do. There's overwhelming evidence that supports it. And the critical part is for us to create the conditions so that we can capitalize and bring everybody to the table. I love how you shared it earlier. Open up the conversation, invite people in. So now we can all benefit from that. And your answer reminded me of a brilliant quote from one of the top positive psychologists Barbara Fredrickson, and I'm going to paraphrase it, where she essentially said, none of us can be at our best without the rest of us. And I just love that idea because it just it just champions beautifully what you've just shared. So we have another question. I knew there would be lots of questions. So Dana really appreciated your observation around living your values and leading with your values. So can you talk a little bit more around that process, what your values are, how you can integrate them into your day-to-day?
So absolutely. And it's a great question, Dana. Thank you. Quite simply, I think of it as my mirror test. That means that I want to lead and live every single day in ways that I can look at myself in the mirror every day and respect and like the person that I see looking back at me. I think all of us need to have flexibilities in our styles because in every given day, every given week, we're going to be working with people of different backgrounds, of different points of view. So I've never been someone who believes that the world is black and white. In fact, I believe very much it's gray, but we all have a core set of values and things, areas we're just not prepared to go to. And that by living that way, I can look myself in the mirror every day and respect the person looking back at me.
Well, and I really appreciate the separation that you've made. Again, very insightful around being flexible in preferences or styles. So we all have different styles. And so to embrace that, and yet there are core values, things we hold dear, who define who we are. And that's so incredibly important. And I love the image of the mirror test, right? When you go home and you look, hey, okay, how did I show up today in my personal and professional life? Did I honor the values that I hold dear and the people who I interacted with during that day? I think that is just absolutely fantastic. I've got another question from Brad wondering this, your story is incredibly inspiring. Was there a pivotal moment or two in your journey that really shifted your perspective or your leadership journey?
Absolutely. There's been a bunch. So thinking of a couple that will come to mind. So I will say my very first boss, incredibly brilliant person, absolutely horrific boss, because it was my first boss in a professional full-time capacity. You don't know, I didn't know if, well, is this just the quote unquote real world or not? Thankfully it wasn't. But in going through that experience, it absolutely, in many ways, he shaped me more than any other leader I'd ever worked with since, because he showed me in excruciating detail the type of leader I did not want to be. Mm-hmm. And while that's not the most enjoyable way to learn, it was incredibly effective. So that absolutely early on shaped me. And then the other piece, I was studying philosophy in university, obviously not a clear career path. I thought I was going to be a lawyer, and thank goodness I didn't end up pursuing that path. But as I was in university and needing to work to pay my way through, I thought, you know what? I ultimately want to work in a creative business. From what I know about the advertising agency life, that sounded like it could be a pretty cool role. If I'm interviewing myself for a role in an advertising agency and I'm studying philosophy, there's no real reason why anyone should hire me. So if that's an area I want to pursue, what am I going to do? So what I decided to do was to make myself my first product. So I was working and going to school in a very small town. There weren't a ton of advertising agencies, but there were four or five. And I developed a marketing campaign of myself. It was before LinkedIn and social media, so it was much more traditional media being used. But I came up with some sort of marketing initiative, whether it was a flyer or whatever, every day, and dropped it off to the different agencies. And ultimately, I think they just finally said, okay, we've got to at least get her in the door and let her have a meeting with us. So if nothing else, she'll stop bugging us with all these bad advertising materials. But ultimately, that's how I got my first part-time job. And ultimately, that's how I got my first full-time job. So that taught me very early in my career to bet on myself and to take some risks, because the downside, if no one had offered me an interview, if that hadn't ended up leading to a part-time and ultimately a full-time job, I really hadn't lost anything. I tried something that didn't work, and I would be able to refine it, hopefully, so it would work better the next time. So those two opportunities very early in my career continue to shape me to this day.
thank you. I have another great comment saying thank you for your courage in sharing your early challenging experience. I too had a horrific boss, and unfortunately, despite what I went through, it was a growing moment for me. And it is, and appreciate once again the framing around, okay, like, what do I take from that? What lessons do I learn from this? And in some ways can really plant the seeds in terms of, okay, this is not where I want to go. I have another question from Charles wondering about, as the head of the Canadian Marketing Association, like, where do you see marketing? How has marketing shifted in the last few years, and where do you see it going into the future?
Every industry today is absolutely going through massive, massive change. I will say that the marketing profession, more than any other profession, magnify that by 10. And the reason for that is, from a marketer's perspective, we're dealing with human beings. So human beings are changing, and ultimately we're marketing to human beings, and they are changing with incredible speed. They are incredibly diverse in their desires and wants and backgrounds. So for marketing to stay on top of that, it means that we as a profession really need to evolve quickly and consistently. So there's a lot going on, certainly Gen AI, but ultimately success in marketing comes down to understanding who you want to reach with a product, the benefits and values you are bringing to them, and ensuring that you have a powerful value exchange and that your product or services is doing something that is worth paying for. So as much as the technology, the competitive set, the marketing environment around us is changing, if you stick to the core principles, those still hold true. The tools for delivering against those core principles will always be changing, but the principles for the most part hold true.
I love that. It's interesting because in my own space, in my own background, in terms of business psychology, I see it very similarly in terms of the core principles hold, and then the context in which they operate shift, yet that experience. So I love that perspective. And one of the things, and it's interesting because it kind of in a parallel universe, there was a question I wanted to ask you as well, Allison, around empathy and leadership, and really what you were talking about as well is like connecting with your stakeholder, your community group, your customers who you're serving through a very empathetic lens. I'm curious, what role, if any, do you see empathy playing in terms of being an effective leader, and how can we be more effective leaders and empathetic?
So I absolutely believe that empathy and understanding are key, not just to effective leadership, but also to a life well lived. So we should always start by listening. We should always be seeking to understand, and that will help us build bridges. It will help us thrive in our professional lives, but also within our communities and our personal lives as well.
And I couldn't agree more. I think it's a universal skill, if you will. It's something that can apply in every domain in our lives, in every relationship. And I also have straight another question in real time. David was wondering, it seems like it's really difficult to get people to listen. What are some key skills, practices that I can take on to be a better listener to others? I love that. That's great.
Great question. That's a great question. I would say, David, the fact that you're asking the question, I would actually probably give you better credit for being a better listener than you're giving yourself credit for. So when you're listening, and this is hard for all of us to resist doing at certain times, when you're listening, focus on listening. Don't focus on shaping your response. Don't assume that you know where that conversation that you're listening to is going to go, because the conversations can often start one way and take a U-turn. And if you've lost focus or stopped actively listening partway through that, you're going to miss the U-turn. And just keep asking yourself, did I listen to what they said? How did I interpret it? If you have any concerns that maybe you missed something, then try playing it back to them to say, okay, so here's what I understand from what you said. I just want to make sure I caught everything. Is there any refinement to that? Is there anything I missed before we continue the conversation? Those check-ins can really help as well.
Well, one of the things you shared, Allison, and again, I got that. So thank you for the answer. So that's great. One of the things that you shared in your answer where you started, I think it's so great where you acknowledge that self-observation of, gee, I wonder if I'm doing this well. Because what's really interesting, it's such a grounding question and also a humble one. And I agree that when we can question those things, that's a really good sign that we're most open to learning, coming back to a key thing that you've touched on time and time again. And I think it's wonderful that you acknowledge that, because just asking ourselves that question and genuinely doing it, I also really appreciate that point around focus, because I find in today's world, our attention is just absolutely under assault, and we can be distracted on our devices and in our phones and all that kind of thing. And I love how you say, you know, kind of slow down and be in the moment, be in that conversation, actively paying attention to what's going on. Another topic I did want to speak with you about as well is the idea of resilience. And it certainly gets a lot of attention, a lot of coverage and mental health. And so I was wondering, how do you keep yourself personally resilient? What are things that you do for you? And also, what are the things that you do to keep your senior leadership team and your organization resilient? Because I know in conversations that I have, it's been described as a perma-crisis. You know, it's just been lots of things happening at one after the other, and people are really drained and strained. So I'd love to hear that from a personal perspective. And then also as the CEO, how do you distill that to your organization?
Craig, you're sorry. This is such an important area for us, anyone working professionally at any level, us as human beings. It's been really grueling, and we all need to acknowledge that it's been really grueling for all of us and cut ourselves some slack and give each other some grace for sure. When I think of ongoing ways that I help manage and build my personal resilience, I take great comfort in getting outside. Even I'm looking outside my window now and it's gray and pouring rain, but still being out in nature, surrounded by nature, even if it's pouring rain, that feeds me for sure. Not surprisingly, I'm going to have running high on my list. That's a great meditation for me. It's a great way to, it's a great attitude adjustment for me. My husband, if I'm having a bad day or a bad week or I'm grumpy, he will highly recommend that maybe I should put on my running shoes and get outside. And he's always right. I come back a different person for sure. And then laughter. And I also have a husband where we laugh a lot together, not each other a lot. But laughter is another really mission critical way to build and keep resilience. And then I've touched on this earlier, but attitude, like speaking from personal experience, the attitude that we bring to any situation, especially difficult situations, we are more in control of that than we often think. So how do we choose to react to bad news or unexpected changes can make them infinitely better or infinitely worse. So I always try to look at that, the attitude I'm bringing in, hold myself accountable to that. The second part of your question around our senior leadership team in the organization, it really helps to know that we're in it together. It really helps to know that we have each other's back and we're supporting each other. We help each other keep perspective. Again, laughter, like the harder things are going, if you suddenly hear someone laughing down the hall or on a video call, it's freeing. It just reminds you that, you know what, no matter how bad things might be right now, there's hope. Mm-hmm. And then also looking at, we all have issues. So try to turn some of those issues on their head and see, does that changing the perspective and thinking on it, does that create some new opportunities? So I've seen that be an effective tool as well.
Love it, Noah. And I think a humor, being from Newfoundland originally, just love, yeah, having that sense of humor. And it is for ourselves personally, and that self-deprecation is having a little bit of fun with ourselves. And then with the people around us, I think it is incredibly healing balm. It's an incredible healing balm and facilitates our resiliency. I really appreciate the observation that you made, Allison, about being outside, exercise as well, countless studies around the benefits of exercise in so many different ways. And in particular, you said getting outdoors. I think it was earlier this year, Dacre Keltner out of Berkeley wrote a great book around awe and talked about the idea of awe walks, AWE, and getting out and kind of going, wow, look at how awesome nature is and my, you know, all these wonderful things and experiences. And I really appreciate your point, something that you continue to come back to. And again, I want to highlight for all of us today, because certainly resonating with me and reinforcing to me is being mindful of our mindset, being mindful of the lens through which we're looking at a particular situation and broadening that. And I really appreciate how you integrated that idea in terms of how you're managing your senior leadership team and how your senior leadership team operates. We're all in this together. We're working together to figure it out. And just that idea of, again, a beautiful application, flipping things on their head, just looking at it in a different way, just opens up so, so much. Another question from Tara saying, just loving this conversation, starting my career, really interested in getting into executive level positions. What advice do you have for me in terms of how I can really expand my impact and take on more and more responsibility as I move forward?
Well, Tara, thanks for joining us today. And that's a really great question. So you're well, with the way you asked the question, you're well on the way to answering it yourself. One piece of advice I would give is say yes to opportunities, especially the ones that scare you a little. There's such rich learning in that. And if they scare you a little bit, it means that you're going to be stretching yourself, and that's a good thing. Know that you're going to make mistakes and you're going to learn from them. Speak up and give yourself credit for, I don't care how junior you are or how in your career, how new you are to your current role, you are there for a reason. You absolutely have something to contribute. So speak up and give yourself the credit and stay humble. And then a personal priority for me, really focus on shared success instead of individual glory. I think that's a key. You can lead and succeed a number of different ways. For me, it's always been around shared success and not around individual glory. So you'll have to think through the best approach for yourself. The most gratifying way to win is to do it as part of a team.
I love that personally. And again, lots of great comments here. Thank you. Fantastic advice. And really appreciate your emphasis, Allison, on that shared perspective, working together, sharing successes together is just such a wonderful philosophy, and it supports everybody. It's something that is beneficial for all parties involved. I've got another follow-up question, which is great.
They're making our job easy for us, aren't they?
It is, yeah. That's why I said, you know, when we were signing on just before, very active group who will jump in, so this is great. Francine, really liked your observation about steering you a little, and you've touched on risk and managed risk. Like, how can I decide which ones are scaring me a little too much, too little risk, too much? Any further insight here around how to manage those risks?
Yeah, another really great question. So there are definitely levels of being scared. You need to dig under and say, what is it about that opportunity that's scaring you? If you feel that I can do 70% of it and not 30% of it, then I would say jump. If you feel that you can do 30% of it, but not 70% of it, then I'd say probably do a little bit more due diligence, because you don't want to put yourself into a situation where you're not set up for success. And if you feel that maybe you don't have enough experience currently for that role, continue the conversation and be very transparent with the person who's talking to you about the opportunity and say, here's what I'm worried about. Here's what I know and how I think I can deliver on this. Here are the areas I'm not sure about. And they can help you understand that maybe some of the areas you don't yet have experience in, maybe they're not as important, or maybe they will offer to support you through that. So you're making a very conscious decision about how much risk you're taking on. That would be where I would start, but I'm sure there's lots of other better answers to that question too.
I think that was fantastic. And several people have commented on that. And I love, once again, how you've broken that down and really provided almost the decision matrix around it, that, okay, if I'm 70% of the way there, go for it. Like, embrace it, take it on. I love the anchoring question about, and again, for everybody listening, so what is it that scares me around this? That's really powerful, because it can get underneath the reaction to it, and so that we can really facilitate self-learning. And then, as you say, if it isn't passing that 70 threshold, all right, so what are those things? Don't just necessarily discard this conversation and move on. Keep it going. Be open. Be transparent. Look to learn. Look to grow. Once again, what I really appreciate is so often that we can take ourselves out of the game or remove ourselves from opportunity through our own choices. And again, not misrepresenting anything. Getting in and going, hey, this is where I am. This is what I'm about. Can you tell me more? It's a process of exploration, and as people can probably guess, curiosity. That's going to be the take. You know, that's the one word we're going to take out of this conversation, which I think is so, so powerful. We're almost out of time. This is awesome. I'm so happy. This has been so much fun. And I do have another question, which is fantastic, from Andrea. Really appreciate your comment about speaking up. Any advice for a more junior executive for how you can have your voice heard effectively without stepping outside of your boundaries?
So I'm a natural introvert. I've learned through my career, you can't do the roles I've been doing are really, you know, you can't do the roles I'm doing without having an ability to be extroverted, but I'm innately an introvert. So I can absolutely relate to the question you're asking. For me, if I'm sitting early in my career, if I was sitting in a boardroom and I was one of the more junior people, the best tip I had was ask my question or contribute early on, because the longer you sit there, the more you get inside your own head and think, well, that those five people had so many smart things to say that there's no way that I'm going to be smarter than them. Whereas if you are one of the first to speak, it's going to be appreciated by the group. It just makes it easier to continue the conversation, and you're not going to get in your own head and make too big of a deal of it that I haven't spoke for the first hour of the meeting. So now if I say something, it has to be like nirvana.
Right. No, and I think that's so good. And one of the things that I appreciated about it as well is it's being aware of that inside voice, as it's been called, chatter in our heads, and how that can derail us from participating. And then, as you say, someone speaks up and someone else speaks up, and then it's less and less and less. And also in my experience, I've found too, in having these conversations where someone's gone, oh, I was going to say that. And they hold back. So I really appreciate, again, and one of the things I want to continue to draw attention to for us today, remembering the three key qualities you talked about earlier, courage. Here's another C word, right? Whereby have the courage to speak up, share a perspective early. I think that's so wonderfully powerful. A question that I love to add.
So you just put me on one other thing. The other reality, when you're more junior sitting around that table, everyone else around the table knows you're more junior. So they're not going to be expecting you to answer the question the way that someone 15 years into their career is answering it. So there's really very little downside for you in speaking up.
And I think that's so powerful as well, is that sometimes, and appreciate that level of empathy as well, in terms of, well, we can make assumptions about, well, how is this going to land and how are they going to perceive it? And then what I really appreciate about that observation, Allison, is that it gives a line of sight to, well, they already appreciate you're more junior in the role. There isn't that, you know, the expectations can be different. And so again, things we might believe are true likely aren't happening. So let's have the courage to step in. One of my final questions, and this has just been, again, so much feedback that I've received, positive feedback. I love to ask, you know, if you could start your career again, kind of the Back to the Future ride, and give yourself some advice, like what's one or two pieces of advice that you would give yourself at the start of your career?
I love that question. So I would say, know that your career won't go as planned, and that's a great thing. There's no way that I could have envisioned the career I've had. And trust me, there has been lots of missteps along the way, but I've always learned from them. And when I look back, I really wouldn't change a thing. And then, and this really builds off the last question that was asked too, realize you have more to contribute than you think you do. So say yes to opportunities, don't be shy about speaking up. And then the third piece I would say is, don't be so focused on the next goal that you forget to enjoy the journey. And that's something that early in my career, I was so focused on what's next, what's next, what's next. I enjoyed the journey, but I didn't fully enjoy it and appreciate it. So take time to enjoy what you're experiencing today, this week, this year, as you're also planning for the future.
Well, I've got, awesome observations. Thank you. Great insights. This is really powerful. And I couldn't agree more. I think it's, to me, having that flexibility, recognizing all the best laid plans, this is not, no matter how much we've thought through this, plan for it, everything else, there are going to be unexpected side trips and all kinds of things. And that's such a resilience building mindset again. And I really appreciate the observation, because that, again, I love the linkages across different episodes where multiple people, CEOs, have said, hey, like, don't just focus on the next goal, the end goal. Lateral moves can be really valuable. This other stretch assignment can be really cool. Like, just be in that moment and start making decisions around you and what motivates you, your values. You touched on this earlier, Allison. Just absolutely fantastic. So before we go, any final thoughts, advice that you want to share with people before we close this conversation today?
I'm actually going to draw back on something that you said, Craig, around awe. When I go up for my morning runs, I always have my phone camera with me and I pay attention, and as much to distract myself from the runs, I pay attention to where I'm running through, and I see beauty in the day, even on a gray, rainy day like today. When you're looking for it, you can find the beauty. Now, I use it as an excuse to stop and take a photo so that I can have a breather in my run, but it also is my daily reminder that no matter what's going on in our life, in our world, if you look for beauty and small moments of joy, you can absolutely find them.
Well, what an awesome quote to end on. Mic drop there. And I couldn't agree more with you as well. And I think that's so important for each of us to reflect on, considering how the pace of our lives just continues to increase and we can get caught up in so many different things. And I love how you're challenging each of us, and challenge accepted on my end as well, that take that moment to step back and experience that awe, sense of gratitude, and let that register, because it's so vitally important and it's within our control. And so remind ourselves of doing that and how important it is. And as you've also touched on as well, so wonderfully, Allison, is sharing it with others. And what I'll close our conversation today with a great comment. So many comments came in, and this resonates terrifically with me. Thank you so, so much for this. So many takeaways, very inspiring. So I couldn't agree
more. This has set my soul. Thank you very much to everyone. It's been a really busy week, and this has absolutely fed my soul. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today.
Well, this has just been awesome. So thank you so, so much, everybody, for joining us today. Looking forward to seeing you next time on Do Good to Lead Well. Until then, take care. Take an awe walk. Get outside. So thanks again, Allison. Bye for now. Thank you so much for joining me here today on Do Good to Lead Well. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. If you'd like to continue the conversation, you can follow me on Twitter at Craig Dowden, or reach out via LinkedIn or email info@craigdowden.com. I look forward to meeting you here next week for another transformational episode.